This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Tuesday, 30th of August, 2022. Very quiet day yesterday, certainly compared to the big slide we had on Friday in the wake of the Jackson Hole speech by Fed Chair Powell. I think the market seems to be scratching around a bit, realizing that it can't really have much more of a takeaway than what it got. To my mind, Fed Chair Powell pretty much delivered what was expected. And we saw that on the close on Friday. And that further follow-on reaction in some of the Fed pricing on Monday was erased a bit yesterday. And I came across a story and a paper from Jackson Hole that I wasn't aware of at the time we were recording yesterday's podcast. And that was a paper that was presented on Saturday at the Jackson Hole conference, talking about the Fed's difficulty in actually doing and carrying out quantitative tightening, and whether it will be able to do so in the same way as it does QE. The QT process is more difficult and can trigger accidents. So it's going to be very interesting to watch these balance sheet holdings, as well the whole discussion around the MBS portion of the quantitative tightening. If they do offload MBS, because there's no natural sort of offloading of those with interest rates where they are, people are very happy to hang on to their old cheaper mortgages and don't want to refinance, then they will have to sell these things with a big markdown loss and requiring a bit of an egg on the face embarrassment PR wise with showing these big losses. So that's one of the ones, one of the things I'm looking at here. But otherwise, it looks like the market may be defaulting to incoming data. We have month end coming up here, Peter. There hasn't been sort of month to date anything really going on in equities. If you look at where the month started, a bit more so in bonds. So I guess there could be some bond buying if that's supposed to be a rebalancing effort. But it was not a terribly remarkable session yesterday.
No, I mean, it has been a very twofold month. So the first half was just full on blitz to the higher with bubble stocks leading the gains. And, the second half has been quite a reversal. The market is really trying to grapple with inflationary pressures and where to put interest rates and expectations for Fed funds for next year, etc. And that repricing has caused commodities to be one of the better places to be. Cybersecurity has done extremely well on very strong result. Energy storage has also done really well this month. But if you look at yesterday, it was just red all across. There was some stabilization in the S&P 500 futures, as you mentioned. They are right now squeezed in between the 50-day moving average on the just below where they currently are trading, so around the 4,000 level, and you have the 100-day moving average coming down above it. So I think we're squeezed into now a very tight trading range, and my feeling is that we're building up some energy for a bigger move in either direction. I think the key thing to watch for equity investors and traders are the CPI. Is the CPI print in the U.S. August, which is out on the 13th of September. So that's really the next big data point that really can shape expectations.
Unless we get a big shocker, I guess, this Friday with the payrolls and or earnings, especially the earnings side of things. And as well, as we look forward to that report, we'll be talking about it more later this week, but that household survey contrast with the establishment survey. We'll talk about that more. Just a little indication on slide 3 showing that financial conditions have been rolling over. It sort of fits with the general trajectory of the equity market. That's our sort of little proprietary indicator on the left there. The risk indicator has rolled over into negative, and one of the things dragging it lower is corporate credit. And it was actually kind of interesting to, by the way, that's an HYG ETF on the right, the price there, that one has rolled over. It reflects the general rise in interest rates as well. That's not just spread. That's just a junk bond ETF. But Neel Kashkari, the Minnesota Fed president, not a voter, but he's been pretty vocal and on the hawkish side after being a permadove prior to that, basically out applauding equities selling off and indicating that he was concerned when equities were rallying in the wake of that July FOMC meeting. So it's very interesting to see a Fed profile is sort of specifically targeting the direction in the equity market as an indicator of concern. Okay, Ola, we need to get over to you because as we're all white-knuckling it ahead of this winter and looking at our natural gas risks and electricity risks, price risks going into this winter here in Europe, what's the latest there and what was behind the big crude jump we saw yesterday?
Well, the crude first of all is once again the focus on supply disruptions. We have some disruptions out of Kazakhstan, with some damages reason to some export terminals, which could take months to rectify. We have we had some fighting in Tripoli over the weekend in Libya, not impacting its oil export for now, but it is a notoriously volatile producer, and obviously, giving its proximity to Europe, it is a key source of supply for energy-starved refineries here in Europe. So that's really, I think, the main drivers for the move higher. Also, just highlight the once again that market can move up, even though there's worries about economic outlook because the supply is tight, and supply is obviously extremely tight in the gas market still. On slide five today, I just put in some just a bit of a status on the market right now. There's been some relief talk this week that the gas storage is progressing really at a good pace. But we still have to keep in mind that one thing is the available stock, another is the daily flow. And a country like Germany needs something like three times throughout its winter, it needs three times more gas in a normal year. Obviously, there isn't demand destruction going on right now, but they need almost three times more gas than they have in storage. So if we're not out of the woods even with storage building at this rate. And obviously, the main focus is this week is on that little red circle on the right hand side of the slide, basically Nord Stream 3, Nord Stream 1, and whether they will cut supplies completely after the maintenance, which starts tomorrow, or whether we're going to see those plus supplies comes back. That really could determine whether we're going to be 50 to 100 euros up or down on the gas price in Europe over the next week or so.
All right, and then in FX, we saw the dollar. I think it was a key driver here of this sort of swoon in risk sentiment in the wake of the Jackson Hole speech by Powell. It sort of just stopped yesterday, just as the equity selling kind of stopped, and we've seen it rolling back over a little bit into this morning. Really pivotal if you look across a number of key dollar charts, that euro dollar around parity, the dollar yen around the cycle highs. Is it a double top, or is it going to follow through higher? As we await incoming data, because I think dollar yen very interest rate focused. Aussie dollar really pivotal between the 69 plus towards 70 area, etc. Dollar CNH pushing though towards the highs of the cycle again overnight. So that one is providing a little bit of pressure in the dollar situation here. So we're watching that one closely. And again, together with dollar yen, whether we have a risk of a spiraling situation there around the Bank of Japan's yield curve control policy, if, and I think it really is only if, we get a new pressure cooker higher in US Treasury yields, whether due to data or otherwise, or if it's simply a dollar liquidity situation more broadly. But that's another one we're watching there. You see the overview on slide four with the FX board, the strength of the various currencies, sterling getting one of the weaker ones and looking still pretty heavy towards the range lows here, these really record lows almost in modern history, especially in terms of being able to hold down here. There was one brief spike lower during the pandemic outbreak months, but just the outlook for the UK economy pretty dire going into the winter here with these gas and power prices and a cost of living crisis ahead. Now, a cost of living that also spreads to food. The wheat situation has really calmed a lot, almost miraculously, if you ask me, Ole. But the corn situation heating up. What's going on there? And this is a key crop for some economies.
It is, and also it's a key crop used in everything from sweetener to motor fuel and what have you, and consumption obviously. But we've seen a strong rally there. We hit a 2 year high. No, sorry, 2 months 2 months high. As this crop tour that the pro farmer tour, as it's called, it's basically every year several hundred people they travel across the grain belt, and they basically count the quality of the crops, soybean and corn. And the results was out yesterday, and they basically see the corn production may hit a 2 year low, well below what the government has forecast in its recent projection. So that's adding some giving a bit to corn. At the same time, something like wheat is still lingering, as you can see as well here on slide six. The crop condition is much better for wheat than it is for corn, but at the same time, we have the concerns about Ukraine. So far, they have harvested 18 or nearly 19 million tons compared to 32 million tons at the same time last year. So we will see a sharply reduced crop from Ukraine. We got worries about this nuclear power plant, and at the same time, exports are well below what we used to, even though it may double in September from what we saw in August. But going into the autumn, corn seems to be leading the way. We need high corn prices in order to attract increased planting in South America. We have to remember that corn is more fertilizer intensive than soybeans. So we need a high price in order to incentivize farmers in South America to plant more corn at the expense of soybeans.
All right, now we had a good internal discussion talking about all these high prices for cost of living, power, natural gas, et cetera, Peter. And that's going to mean some kind of impact on discretionary spending. If you simply have to pay more for necessities, you have less left over for other things. So take us through where your focus could be on that account and your stocks to watch today after that discussion.
Yeah, I will write a bigger piece today that will be out on analysis.saxo. Steve and I was poking around yesterday. We're trying to figure out, so what is the primary energy? So all the energy we spend on heating, on transportation, electricity generation, et cetera, the whole lot. What was that? What is that energy cost in percentage of GDP? And we on a global basis, we've moved to 14, 15% of GDP with 7% viewed as a structural neutral balance point in the economy. And every time we're above 7%, it acts as a very severe tax on consumption. And that's why we're highlighting consumer stocks today, not only the European ones, also the US and Asian ones, because it is a global energy crisis, but most acute and severe in Europe, of course, but it is a global phenomenon. And we've seen several downgrades this morning from big sell side firms across the European consumer sector. And I've put in the MSCI World Consumer Discretionary Index on a total return basis versus the MSCI World also on a total return basis. We're on slide 7 in today's slide deck. And you can see that the initial relative weakness in consumer discretionary stocks were, of course, driven by that massive pivot by the Fed back in late November, early December. We had the big repricing of interest rates, inflation expectation, et cetera. And then consumer discretionary stocks have come back during this rebound that started in early July. And it looks like we're rolling over. And I'll write a bigger piece because I really think the impact from this is going to be quite severe. I mean, I don't think people are going to spend a lot of money on discretionary consumer items. And that's the side story. I haven't put it in here, but I think the whole media and entertainment industry as well could be on the hook here. Also, I overheard two moms in the supermarket the other day talking about how they wanted to constrain their kids' gaming because their gaming computers were spending or were actually consuming a lot of electricity. So it sounds fun, but I think it's actually reality here in Denmark to think in all the different little places where you can actually cut down on electricity. So it really tells you why it is a tax on life. Yeah, and then we have had two Chinese companies reporting earnings overnight, Pinduoduo and BYD, both companies out with very strong results, especially BYD with the massive acceleration in electric vehicle sales that we're seeing in China. That was really what shielded them. And that is a nice segue into slide 8 because on Friday I wrote a preview on the on this week's earnings releases, and of course the focus is on Chinese earnings. And if you look at the chart here to the right, you can see how Chinese companies have they were insulated or had a less impact on earnings during the pandemic. But then on the rebound, but then on the rebound has also been much slower, and they have been dealing with these COVID restrictions, and that has really been causing Chinese companies to play catch up here. But the Q2 so far looks actually quite well. We have Jiangxi Lithium and Ganfeng Lithium, the two big lithium miners in China. They are on our focus today because of that very much constrained supply of lithium. We know that from cattle that are building lithium batteries. Tesla as well have mentioned this. And the lithium price is just stuck. It's just like the electricity price. It is at 10 levels 10 times higher than the low points during the pandemic. And they just don't seem to be coming down. So we need more supply. Baidu as well will be reporting pre the US market open here in the equity market. And They, of course, are very big on online advertising, and that's linked to the overall state of the economy, I think. So I'm really curious to see their outlook there. And then CrowdStrike, one of the key players in the cybersecurity industry, is also reporting today in the US, really a name I'm watching out for. And then some would say, why don't mention HP? But I don't really think it's a company that is moving anything any longer.
Okay.
Sorry for that.
And on the lithium front and on the energy front, and what I imagine is the pressure on the momentum in EV sales. You can almost sense the panic with some of the recent statements by Elon Musk. All right, let's look at the macro calendar. So a couple of interesting data points up today. We have these latest Eurozone CPI figures. Whether they surprise a little bit at the margin here or there is less interesting, I think. ECB's Lane was out yesterday, actually arguing for a slightly sort of steady pace of rate hikes, which theoretically would be pushing back against the idea that the ECB is set to go for 75 basis point move next week. But the pricing remains pinned rather aggressively for at least higher odds of a 75 basis point move than a 50 basis point move. So that's supporting the euro at the margin, at least. But what, of course, is not supporting is the entire backdrop with the emergency pressure on the economy from natural gas and power prices. But let's look at what we have that's interesting today. So besides that flash CPI out of Germany, we have a Hungarian rate decision. They're expected to go another 100 basis points higher. I'm losing track of what the rate will be. I think it's 11.75% after that decision today. They're certainly on the ball to a degree more than the ECB, but of course, inflation is also higher in Hungary. And we have the August Consumer Confidence Survey. Interested in that one. That's out of the U.S., again, is it continuing to decline, indicating a bit more pressure also potentially on the jobs market? And then the July, it's a month delay, but it is the July JOLTS job opening survey. It came off pretty heavy last month, but it's still at extremely high levels, the number of job openings relative to the history of this survey. So that one's interesting. And then, of course, in Ola's space, we'll be looking at the API weekly crude oil and stock reports tonight, and then the DOE weekly levels tomorrow. Then we have the Eurozone flash CPI tomorrow. And then the big stuff comes later in the week, ISM manufacturing, and then the US jobs report on Friday. That is a wrap for today. Let's stay careful out there, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.